if you're well educated, you know, you are automatically included within the society. But for the rest of the people that are not well educated or academically inclined, they have to climb their own ladders or have to build their own ladders. So how can we as a society, you know, include them in and as well as provide opportunities for them?
For this segment, we'll be talking about the things that divide us as a society and how we can better bridge those divisions. So now let's do a quick poll, and I will read out a statement and you will have to vote agree or disagree. The green forward sign represents agree, and the red stop sign means disagree. And DPM, you can also vote. Yes. So everyone listen, here's the statement, and the statement is, there are more issues that divide us than connect us in Singapore today. Agree or disagree? There are more issues that divide us than connect us in Singapore today. Keep them raised up. And we're going to hear from folks who shared that they agree first. So people with the green signs up. Who would like to share your thoughts on why you agree with the statement?
Hi, afternoon, DPM. My name is Yuvan from National Youth Council and chairperson of Sindar Youth Club. I think it's a lot more easier to see those divisions, especially on social media and hearing your perspectives. And there's a lot more of external influence on worldviews. I mean, for me, when I was growing up in secondary school and junior college and all, it was all largely by papers. And if you don't agree with it, that's fine. But now it's a lot more visual. And it's a lot more of the comments page that you can see those kinds of views. So maybe it's not that the views have changed, but they have become more pronounced and easier to articulate currently.
Definitely. Maybe we'll hear from one more person before we weigh in on that. Anyone else want to share? Why do you agree? Rudy?
I think right now, people holding extreme views are in the minority, but social media has allowed them to actually pull more people towards that or maybe to hold similar views as them. And I think the concern is that we will not be able to bring everyone back to the middle and find like a common ground. I'm concerned that polarization will divide Singaporeans, right? So for example, on hot button topics, recently the repeal of 377A, but for now we've been able to find a middle ground where majority of Singaporeans can agree on, right? But we've mentioned like with the rise of social media, people able to advocate for their causes, at the same time also creating echo chambers, right? And with so much hate in the comments section nowadays, right? I'm worried that these things will divide Singaporeans, polarization will happen, and we can even take a look at what's happening in the US over the past 20 years with the political polarization that's happening there, right? And in the future, more hot button issues will come about. So my question is, how do we have these tough conversations? How do we get people with opposing views into the same room and have a safe and meaningful conversation?
The concerns that are highlighted are real. Social media does tend to amplify certain views. It creates an echo chamber, and then people, like-minded people, you know, find comfort in that, and it just reinforces a particular view. And the risk, as has been highlighted, is that as society becomes more diverse, we become more divided, more polarized, rather than coming together. Yeah. But the flip side of it, and the reason why I showed this, is because I do think that there are also some positives that we can take away, especially from the last 3 years of dealing with the pandemic. We do see over the years and decades that sense of Singaporean identity becoming stronger. People identify with who we are as Singaporeans. We across different races, language, religion, we think of ourselves as Singaporeans first. Our sense of culture, heritage is becoming stronger, even for a very young nation, and that's something positive. And when there is a crisis, when there are challenges, we do come together in solidarity. And we saw that in the last 3 years when Singaporeans reached out to others in need and went the extra mile to look after their fellow citizens. So there are also many positive signs that we can, you know, draw from the experience in the past to think about how we can continue to strengthen our solidarity, strengthen our Singaporean identity, and expand the common ground we share as Singaporeans. Ultimately, we must always remember we are a diverse society. There will be people of different views, bound to be, particularly on issues we care deeply about, around sexuality, around gender. You know, there will be different views, and we should be respectful of these different views. We should listen to one another, and we should learn how to accommodate these different views. Accommodating these different perspectives sometimes will require us to be able to compromise. That means no single group can get everything they want. So in Singapore, compromise must never be a bad word. Because if compromise is seen as dishonoring my tribe, dishonoring my identity, and I can never compromise, I must have maximum. This is whatever your cause is, I must have the maximum entitlement, the maximum, I assert my maximum rights. Every group wants to do that. Then, indeed, we will end up like many Western countries, completely divided. But if we can learn to live with one another, listen to one another's views, and recognize the differences, be big-hearted about it, and then find ways to accommodate and compromise, live with one another, and know that we can never change the views overnight. We will not convert or bring another person to our point of view, but, you know, live with the differences and learn to embrace our diversity. And amidst that diversity, find the common ground we share as Singaporeans. And there are many things that we hold in common as Singaporeans. And if we continue on that journey, then I think we can continue to work at a more perfect union here in Singapore, a more perfect multiracial and multi-religious society. That must always be the Singapore story.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for sharing your perspective. So we're going to be doing one more poll on this topic. And the poll, or the statement really, is Singapore is already an inclusive country. Do you agree or disagree? And if you agree, show green. If you disagree, show red. Singapore is already an inclusive country. That's reds and greens. We'll get a comment from the red folks, yeah? So we have some folks here. Does anyone have anything to share? Maybe the lady up front.
Hi, I'm Nisha. I'm a final year undergraduate and the co-president for Students for Safer NUS. So my work surrounds around mostly providing victim survivors of sexual violence with support, and also providing an inclusive space such that people, regardless of your orientation, your gender, your race, your beliefs, whatever it is, you know, we provide you that support. But I think a lot of times in terms of providing like the inclusivity and stuff, you kind of have like both sides that come in, similar to your point, where some people get very extreme. And because of that extreme viewpoint, it gets very difficult to provide support. And for that reason, you kind of like lack that whole inclusive space. I mean, in terms of like Pink Dot celebration, you know, you can only do it at Hong Lim. But that being said, even though you can only do it at Hong Lim, you can still practice your sexuality outside. You're not controlled from doing that. But I think it's really more a thing on the conversation that we had on mindset change and mindset shift, that, you know, over time we need to be inclusive in a sense that, in terms of the beliefs that we have, is that we are not, you know, as we said, we have be compromised and we're not tolerating each other. I hate the word tolerate because I feel there's a sense of disrespect and disregard to the person, but the fact that we respect each other regardless of whatever we are. Yeah, thank you.
Maybe one more comment or... from the red, why don't you go first?
Yeah, thank you very much for this opportunity. So my name is Alex. I work in the healthcare startup sector. So one of the comments on inclusivity is actually on meritocracy inclusivity. So if you are well, or if you're well-educated, automatically included within the society. But for the rest of the people that are not well-educated or academically inclined, they have to climb their own ladders or have to build their own ladders. So how can we as a society, you know, include them in and as well as provide opportunities for them?
Thank you. I said yes to this question, but I also would qualify that we can be more inclusive, right? So it's really a matter of degree. I think we are better than many other places, but it's certainly not perfect. We have our own flaws, and we must continue to make Singapore more inclusive. Part of this is, as you say, just now about the system of meritocracy. I don't think it's about meritocracy itself being fundamentally flawed. After all, if you don't decide to have a system based on merit, what is the alternative? You will still have closed circles. You know, if you say I decide on the basis of who my family connections are, that would be even worse. Or if I decide on the basis of wealth, that's even worse. So on the basis of merit is, I think, a fair system, but unfettered meritocracy has its downsides, we know. And it can easily lead to a stratification because people may use proxies for measuring merit. The proxies may include, which school did you go to? And then that becomes a small closed circle, right? Or which profession you are in, and that becomes a closed circle, and then you ignore the others. So we must always avoid that. And our task is to see how we can be an open, compassionate, inclusive meritocracy so that, going back to the earlier conversation, people can excel and succeed across different fields and will always feel that they have a role and they belong in Singapore society. And the same goes for other aspects. Merit, we talked about jobs, professions, but the same goes for people with different views, religious views, different views around sexuality, gender. I think we need to have space for people to share these views, to have the freedom to speak and talk about what they believe in without being threatened, without being discriminated against, or even being harassed, or worse, cancelled on social media. And this applies across the board. No one should feel threatened because of their religious views or affiliation. No one should feel threatened because he or she is LGBT, for example. But if we can develop or create a society that's more respectful, that embraces our differences, strives to listen more to people with differences, different views from our own, and continually build connections and bridges amidst our diversity, I think we will be stronger as a society.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. So I think just kind of digging deeper into the whole idea of race, right? You know, according to a 2021 survey conducted by Today, 4 in 10 youth have said that they experience racism. And 6 in 10 Malays and Indians believe that minorities are more likely to have such experiences. So we have two questions on race from the online community, and we'd like to get your thoughts on that. So the first question is, to what extent must politics and race be kept separate? And the second question is, has the time come for us to move beyond the CMIO model and ethnic integration policies in our housing estates or other forms of government administration that require racial categorization?
Well, politics and race should never mix. We do not ever want to get into race politics in Singapore or money politics, for example. I think those are clear no-nos for the PAP government, certainly, and we will do our very best to keep such politics out of Singapore. And hopefully Singaporeans will also reject any such form of politics, because any time you bring race, money into politics, you will change the tone of politics, and I think it will bring us into a direction that I don't think will be good for the country at all. Regardless of your political backgrounds and beliefs, I think this is just bad for Singapore. And all of us will be worse off for it. On the issue of CMIO and policies around race, EIP, for example, I can appreciate the desire that many young people have to say, let's move out of these policies, let's be race blind. And that's an ideal that we would like to strive towards. But the reality is, in many countries, everywhere around the world, ignoring race, ignoring ethnicity, doesn't mean that racism will go away. Ironically, when you ignore them in policy making, you may actually make things worse. And we have seen examples, we're not just saying in abstract, we've seen examples of that in many other places. For example, where ethnic enclaves form, and governments don't know how to deal with that because they don't track race. They don't want to talk about race. And therefore, without the ability to track and understand what is happening on the ground, they don't have the tools to deal with these ethnic enclaves, which can, you know, bring about a more separated society, a more divided society. So we have to understand these realities. The forces of racism do exist in Singapore. We must try to be better, but ignoring race is not going to be the solution, unfortunately. We have to tackle it, we have to deal with it, and we have to continually work at becoming a more perfect multiracial society.
And is there a perfect one that, you know?
It will never be perfect. It will always be a work in progress. But that is exactly why we are all here, isn't it? You know, Singapore is not perfect. We have our flaws. But it's precisely because of the flaws that all of us here in Singapore have a reason to want to fix the flaws and make society better. You know, and I think that's going to always be a work in progress, that we are continually improving and making things better in Singapore. And that should motivate us to want to keep building better. Because if we are not the ones doing it in Singapore, who else will do it for us? Someone from outside Singapore? This is our country. So we have every reason to want to improve the situation in Singapore and make things better. And in doing so, I think we can draw confidence from what our forefathers, what our pioneer generation have gone through, the challenges they had to overcome in making Singapore where it is today. And we can draw confidence from the fact that there are few things in Singapore, few problems in Singapore that we can't overcome if we apply ourselves as one people to these problems. There are few things we can't overcome. I mean, if we collectively come together, we can resolve everything. We can resolve all challenges, and we can continue on this journey of making Singapore better.
For sure. So I think, you know, as Singaporeans, we are, you know, we're best suited to figure out our solutions
exactly.
together.
Exactly. Otherwise, who else is going to figure it
and
for
it's
us?
Because we are experiencing it ourselves, right? So I'd love to hear more from the audience about, you know, maybe are there any, like, certain questions or thoughts that you have around the divisions that you're still seeing within Singapore? So why don't you go?
Hi, DPM. My name is Daniel. I'm a community volunteer at the grassroots level as well as with Malay Muslim organizations. I think my question draws together from the different threads of conversations that we've had. You've mentioned the importance and the sensitivity of discussions around race, for example. We've talked about the importance of diversity, having a platform to have different voices. But let me introduce, you know, a third part of that spectrum, which is those who perhaps are apathetic or maybe uncomfortable to even broach or have those conversations. So I think I would like your views on, is it important to draw these individuals into those conversations as well? How do we do it? And from experience, I think, also not only from my experience, I think quite a number of the volunteers here as well, when they try to reach out to certain groups, there's that discomfort, especially on sensitive issues such as race and religion, but those voices are important too. So how do we draw them in? Is it important? And given the gravity of some of these issues that we should solve together, as you've mentioned, what would the future look like, in your opinion, regarding this issue?
Thank you. Should we take there are so many questions, so maybe give others a chance to speak
maybe we'll,
as well.
We'll get one more question, and then we will get you to answer before we move forward.
Hello, DPM. My name is Nasuha. I'm from Singapore Polytechnic, currently a final year student. And my question regarding this topic is, like, we talk a lot about inclusivity, and you even mentioned about compromising and so on. But as a female who adorns the hijab for many years in Singapore, I have often found myself having to forgo or choose certain things over the other in respect to my religion or my belief. So when we talk about going to government schools, you have the uniform and you're not allowed to adorn the hijab. So I'm blessed to have been allowed or been accepted into madrasa. But that doesn't really give you the same experiences that normal students have in government schools. And when we talk about tertiary education as well, we go to junior college and there is the uniform again and you are not allowed to wear the hijab in that kind of an environment, which kind of, I would say, it's like when I have to make a decision, this comes as a deciding factor. And what is your opinion on it as a whole? Yeah.
Thanks for
sharing. Thank you. So actually, thank you for sharing.
We do have one more. We have time for one more comment.
Yes.
Yeah, my question is actually regarding the CMIO model that you brought up as well. As Singapore necessarily becomes more diverse in the future with increasing trends in, for example, interracial and inter-ethnic marriages, how can we adapt or change the CMIO model in such a way that actually allows Singaporeans to meaningfully construct their identities, especially when they don't fall into the neat boxes of the CMIO model?
Thank you. On that, we have already adjusted. We have now allowed for double-barreled identities, so we can allow for some flexibilities around that, I'm sure, in order to accommodate people who do not fall neatly. And indeed, more and more of us will be in that category. So we should continue to review and update our classification so it's not overly rigid. On the broader issues that were talked about, there will always be some tension, there is no doubt, because Singapore is a diverse society. We are probably one of the most diverse societies in the world where religion is concerned. All the major faiths of the world are here in Singapore. But we are a secular state. We are not a Christian country, a Buddhist country, a Taoist country, a Muslim country, or a Hindu country. We are a secular state where people of all faiths live together. And therein, you know, lies that the need for that balance. In some areas, we do want to have common space where we can all interact freely with one another, regardless of our faiths. And that applies to school uniforms. It applies to certain institutions where we want everyone to be just free to interact rather than, you know, restrict the ability for us to come together as one people. At the same time, we must have sufficient space for people to have the freedom to practice their religions, to continue with their faiths, and we must find the right balance. The balance is never static, right? The balance will continue to evolve as we continue to review and look at different practices, because each community's aspirations also evolves along the way. So we will always review these policies, never cast in stone, but always with an attitude of engaging one another, listening to each other's concerns, and finding the right balance that will allow us to live peacefully and harmoniously with one another. That's our approach. And part of that approach means continuing to engage as many people as possible, including those, as you mentioned, who may feel a little bit uncomfortable, may not always participate in these forums, but that means all the more important for us in the government as well as in community faith organizations to do their part as well. Reach out beyond your own community, engage in interfaith dialogues, engage in interrace racial dialogues and conversations. And we have many groups and organizations doing that, but we can continue to do more, particularly face-to-face dialogues. Social media can allow you to reach many people very quickly, but I think it's different. There is something different about having that face-to-face dialogue where you can build human connections. Social media, you can very quickly get a whole range of views. You reach out to hundreds of thousands of people at one time with a post, but it's not quite the same because sometimes the comments are anonymous, and then you encourage a lot of that, the concerns that was highlighted, where people just feel free to blare out whatever their views are without consideration, sufficient consideration for others. And it may end up being more polarizing and then bringing people together. But having these face-to-face conversations, I think, help us to listen, see each other, connect with one another. The challenge, though, is that face-to-face engagements can't scale so quickly. I can do this with all of you here, but how to do it to reach out to hundreds of thousands of people, very, very challenging. So but this is where the challenge is, and this is why we must all embrace this task of engaging one another, meeting with one another, listening to one another, and hopefully strengthening our consensus as Singapore society.
So thank you for sharing that and everyone for sharing your comments. So I'd love to hear more from you. Do you have any thoughts or questions to share with us?
I'm Asher. I'm a social worker and I run a youth nonprofit working in mental health called Limitless. So this question is from a lifetime ago when I used to work in a family service center. So now, as you mentioned, we are building more flats, right? And I want to ask a little bit about rental flats. So are we going to eventually see a day whereby, you know, rental flats, instead of being built in one block, will be interspersed, you know? Because coming from a place where I used to work with people who live in one-room flats, we understand that the built environment can do a lot, right? So if the built environment is, you know, I have no room, the person downstairs taking drugs in the staircase, right? You know, the kids downstairs running around naked, you know, and then never go to school. From as a young person growing up in that environment, it'll be very hard for me to break out poverty. So I always wonder, you know, will you ever see a day whereby the one-room flat is next to the five-room flat? Mm-hmm.
Your wish has been granted. We already do this. We have this in a few flats now, and we will do more of that, where we integrate the rental units together with the sold units within the same block, precisely for the reasons that you highlighted, which we think it's a very good objective to get people to be able to live together, the children to grow up together, play in the same playgrounds, go to the same schools, and create that conducive environment for families from lower income backgrounds. So we already do this, we want to do more, but there will be a process of trying to move people from where they are today in their present rental flats to these new rental flats. And that process will take a bit of time because also some of them don't want to move, right? Because they may be living in an area which they are very comfortable and maybe very accessible because of schooling, because of what all the different reasons, and they may not want to move to a completely new area. But we are working on this transition to more rental units integrated with sold flats. I think that's fully in line with what you have asked for.
Thank you so much.
So now we've come to the end of our segment, and thank you everyone for sharing your insightful questions and comments as well. We do see a lot of people surrounding DPM Lawrence. I don't know whether you're a very popular person or people really feel incredible.